We have been looking at the life of Jacob the last 2 weeks. Up until this point, you would be hard-pressed to find a single reason for God to have selected him to be the future father of God's covenant nation. He cheated, defrauded, committed acts of polygamy, created jealousy and strife in his own family, failed to forgive Laban, and he was prideful. These are not exactly godly characteristics, are they?
And he was a coward.
He was a lot of things. If a committee of people had been formed back in the book of Genesis to select the future father of the nation of Israel, Jacob would not even have made the shortlist. But God chose him. God chose Jacob. As Jacob returns to the promised land, we will begin to see signs of a spiritual transformation taking place in him. So as we pick up the narrative in chapter 32, we've just studied that the confrontation with Laban ended peacefully. Laban has departed, and Jacob and his family are resuming their journey. And as they make their way south toward the promised land, the land of Canaan, they are being escorted by a band of angels. That's what's happening as we get into the next chapter. Jacob, chapter 32 begins, went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." So he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Now Mahanaim is translated, it means two camps. So one camp is obviously God's camp with these angels, and the other is Jacob's camp. He sees two camps. They are there, the angels, to protect Jacob and those with him. Now remember, God had told him back in chapter 31, when he was still up at Laban's house, he said, "Return to the land of your fathers and your relatives, and I will be with you." Being with Jacob is God's promise to comfort and sustain and protect Jacob. And the truth is that these angels have been with Jacob ever since he left Bethel years before. He just couldn't see them. At Bethel, God had told Jacob, "Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go." It's only now that God opens Jacob's eyes so he can actually see the angels that God sent. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. That's where Esau is living now. He instructed them, these messengers, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob," here's the message, "I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight." So Jacob's mind is now focused on this family reunion he's about to go into with his brother. I mean, he is concerned about Esau. John Phillips, in his commentary, makes this observation about Jacob's mindset at this time. Jacob, and this is a quote, "Jacob had to face in full the long account he had run up with his brother so many years before. It's always that way. God cannot possibly bless us with spiritual blessings until we face our trespasses and put right, where it lies within our power, the wrongs we have done." That's the end of the quote. God's dealing with it, with this guilt that's in Jacob's life, reminds us that God will deal the same way in ours. Jacob knows that he must make things right with his brother. Well, that's in his mind. Frankly, that's a scary thought to him, because he remembers when he left the way things were. He begins to be focusing on this reunion, and he's concerned. And the messengers that he had sent to Esau returned to Jacob saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him." Uh-oh. That doesn't sound good.
Sounds like he's still ticked off before.
Ooh. "Then Jacob was greatly afraid." I guess so, right? And distressed. "He divides the people who are with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two camps, thinking," this is in Jacob's mind, "if Esau comes to the one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape." So what does Jacob think may happen? Right. He's thinking the worst, right? That his brother Esau will be hostile toward him. Jacob has been dreading this for a while. And things ended very badly between him and his brother all those years ago. Jacob doesn't know what to expect now after all this time. So he divides his camp up so that if Esau does have evil intentions, at least a part of the group will have a chance to survive. I have a question for you. Do Jacob's actions here show a lack of faith in God?
I'd say not necessarily, because right now he's looking at his brother Esau, so he's not looking at God. That's why he's afraid.
Okay, anybody else?
Well, but if he had faith in God, tagging on her. If he had faith in God, he wouldn't have a lack of faith.
There you go. So there's that thought. So you both either brought up good points. Anybody else?
Where you focused.
Yeah. Anybody else?
I'm sure he was scared at the moment.
Oh, he's scared. The Bible says that. He's scared.
It's kind of hard to keep your faith when you're scared about something.
So you're going to let Jacob off the hook here? Okay. Anybody else have a thought? I don't want to give the wrong answer. All right. That's funny. I always love to ask these questions. And there's only a couple of people that will speak. Everybody else is like, I don't know. So anyway, just something to think about. I mean, God's told Jacob that he's going to be with him. Right? He strongly inferred that means a hand of protection with him, right? Right? Wouldn't you say?
Yes. But it's still unnatural.
But that's human side to still fear, right? This might be what we would do too. I mean, let's just be honest. So this is how I see this whole chapter, just so you know. This leading up to this family reunion with Esau, what we're going to see is that God is testing Jacob. Much like he tested Abraham back in chapter 22 when he asked him to go sacrifice Isaac, right? It's a test. How's Jacob going to react? Is Jacob going to depend on God? Early on in this test, as I see it, Jacob appears on the surface to be relying on himself and not God. But let's read on before we make any final judgments. Let's read on, because we haven't got to the whole story yet. Something to kind of think about as we go along. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord who... So what's he doing?
Praying.
He's praying, right? So Jacob's praying. O Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. So he's remembering what God told him. That's a good thing. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love. Oh, that's true. And of the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed the Jordan. He's remembering back. That's all I had. And now I have become two camps. Now look at all the stuff I've got. That's God's blessing. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him. Jacob's being honest with God here, isn't he? That he may come and attack me, the mothers, with the children. That's his fear. That's Jacob's biggest fear. But you, God, you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. Okay, so I'm going to give Jacob, who I'm not a big fan of, but I'm going to give him a lot of credit here. He goes to God in prayer. He lays it all out before the Lord. He asks God for protection based on God's promises to him before. I'd say that's pretty sound theology. This is actually a really good prayer. It sounds like a completely different Jacob than we've seen before. We haven't heard Jacob pray like this before, have we? Ah. But let's keep going. So he, speaking of Jacob, stayed there that night. And from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau. 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams. Just a little present for his brother. 30 milking camels and their calves, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, 10 male donkeys. These he handed over to his servants. Every drove by itself and said to his servants, pass on ahead of me and put a space between drove and drove. So he's going to do these a little bit at a time, increments. He instructed the first, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, to whom do you belong? Where are you going? And whose are these ahead of you? Then you shall say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau, and moreover, he is behind us. He likewise instructed the second and the third, same way. Say the same thing. And all who followed the droves, for you shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me. And afterward I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. That's what's in Jacob's mind. So the present passed on ahead of him, and he himself stayed that night in the camp. So while Jacob has indeed given his problem over to God, we can see that he's still Jacob. Yes, he trusts God, but he feels, this is all human thinking here, that it would be a good idea to maybe soften Esau up a bit, right? Give him a little present like these few animals, right?
Well, he did take his birthright.
He plans to do this by giving him a whole bunch of gifts, right? That's what's in Jacob's mind. As we will see later, none of this is necessary. He doesn't need to do this. But in his mind, it's a good idea, right? The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. And he took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone. Let's stop right there for a minute. Crossing the Jabbok River brings you into the land of Edom. This is Esau's home territory. Jacob's alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, Jacob's a 95-year-old guy, come on. When he saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. The million-dollar question is, who is this man, as he's called, that Jacob wrestles with all night? Two schools of thought out there.
I always thought it was an angel.
Okay, here are the two main schools of thought, and neither one of them are wrong, because the truth is we don't know for sure. Number one is what you just said. He was a special angel sent by God with a message for Jacob. I tend to sort of fall along those same lines of thought myself. But there's another school of thought that people have, and a lot of great scholars have said this. He is God himself in human form, perhaps a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. The last part of verse 25 says that he touched his hip socket and put it out of joint. So whoever this man is, obviously no ordinary human, because no ordinary human could do that, touch him and his hips out of joint. All right. So this is an angel or someone very special, could be a pre-incarnate Jesus. We don't know. Then he, this man, said, let me go, for the day is broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Jacob wants the blessings of God. Despite the obvious pain that he must be in with this dislocated hip, you can imagine the pain, right? Doesn't have any pain relief medicine, morphine, and any of that. So Jacob clings to this man with everything he's worth. He recognizes this man is from God, and he refuses to let him go until he blesses him. One of Jacob's positive characteristics is that he always has shown a dogged determination, perseverance. That's one of his good traits. And here's another example of it. And he said to him, what is your name? Talking to Jacob. And he said, Jacob. It's interesting, when his father had asked him what his name was, he had said Esau. Remember that way back when? Now he's being honest. Okay, my name's Jacob. All right. Then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. So Jacob gets his name changed from Jacob, which means supplanter, from his old nature as a conniver and a deceiver that he's known for. His new name, his new nature, is Israel, which means God's warrior. I'll comment more on Jacob's name change here in a minute. I want to just go ahead and finish out verse 29. So verse 29 says, and Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And there he blessed him. So basically this man ignores Jacob's request. No need for you to know. He infers that it's not for Jacob to know, and so the mystery about who this man is will remain forever. We don't know who it was. We can debate it all day long. Jacob gets what he wants. He gets a blessing. He says that he blessed Jacob. And with that, Jacob releases the man, and he disappears. Let's talk about the name change from Jacob to Israel. I looked it up. After his name gets changed here in chapter 32, Jacob will still be referred to as Jacob 65 more times in the book of Genesis. He'll be referred to as Israel 38 times. It's good to have a concordance. Okay. The question I had is, why? You know, when Abraham got his name changed, he was always from then on called Abraham, right? So, and Sarah, same thing. So, why this sometimes Jacob, sometimes Israel kind of thing? I mean, it's always kind of, I've always been curious about that. I've had my theories, but then I read something that J. Vernon McGee, the old radio preacher, said in his commentary. It made a whole lot of sense. Quote, from here on, Jacob is going to manifest a spiritual nature, a dependence upon God. But this change doesn't happen suddenly. We are creatures of habit. Jacob will lapse back into his old ways many times. But we begin to see something different in him now. Before we are through with him, we will find that he is a real man of God. End quote. So what Mr. McGee is getting at is that of the 38 times that the name Israel is used for Jacob, right? That they name Israel 38 times? 29 of those will occur in the last several chapters in Genesis toward the very tail end of Jacob's life. So the change in Jacob and his nature takes a while. It doesn't change overnight. So that's the idea here, just so you know. I'm going to pause just to rest a minute. Does anybody have any questions so far before we get into the actual reunion coming up?
Yeah, was it? Was I the only one who wondered that, why would the guy wrestle with him all night? All I had to do is touch his hip, and it's over with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Why?
And why did he want to change his name?
Yeah. Well, we understand what the name change means. It's a change of his nature. How God sees him and views him.
But God was working through this man that also could have fixed his hip.
Whoever he is, yeah. That was someone sent by God. Could have been God himself, like the one school of thought is. But someone from God that, we're going to talk about Jacob's limp here in a minute, but yeah, why did he wrestle with him so long? Why didn't he just go zap him right away? Well, I don't know. Why does God wrestle with us sometimes so much? Why didn't he just zap us?
So Esau came across with 400 men going toward.
Yeah, he's on his way. Here he comes. Yeah.
So who are these 400 men?
They're Esau's men. Huh? They're just Esau's men. They're just people that are.
They're not slaves.
They're just soldiers that Esau's hired that work for him. They're under his employ. They're under his employ. We don't know who they are. They're just under his employ.
Is that in the Bible?
They're his servants.
Did it say that? Well, that's what I'm wondering. They're his servants?
They're just men with the. All it says is it's men. Yeah, it doesn't say what they are.
And then.
Presumably they're his servants.
Is it Jacob that has two wives, two female servants,
uh-huh.
and 11 sons.
Uh-huh.
Does he have any daughters?
We talked about that last time. He has daughters, plural. Dinah's the only one that's named. Yeah, he does have daughters. But we talked about last week why it is in the Bible that sons are so prominent over daughters, because they're the ones that get the inheritance, right? So.
Well, going forward throughout the rest of Jacob's life, I know you said not right then, but is he just referred to as Israel?
For the most part, after this name change, he's still called Jacob, right? Until the tail end of his life, and then more and more he's called Israel. So really what J. Vernon McGee was saying in his commentary was, when Jacob begins to show characteristics of God being God's man, this change, then that's when he's called Israel. When he acts that way, he's more and more called Israel. As long as he's acting like old Jacob in the flesh, he's Jacob. And so he's mostly Jacob, but then later on, more and more he becomes Israel. Yeah. So McGee sees this nature of Jacob's as God slowly but surely changing him. Which makes sense to me.
Yeah. So it wasn't like he was addressing two different groups of people, but one would refer to him as Jacob.
Right.
Different groups.
Same guy.
Consider him.
Right. But he just, sometimes he often acted in the flesh. Acted like the old Jacob, the old nature. Doing things his way. I got this in my mind. I got to do this way. I trust God, but I'm going to, you know. And then more and more, he just began to yield more and more to God and trust him. And God began to work in his life through a whole series of really tragic events. So, anyway. He had a hard life. As we're going to see. All right.
Jacob had a lot of followers.
Who did?
Did Jacob have a lot of followers?
You mean family?
Followed him,
his family.
Like a disciple?
Yeah, he wasn't a prophet.
Like his brother had 400 men.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yes, Jacob has a lot of people at his disposal too, but not as many as Esau here, not as many as Abraham did, because he's on the move. And he hasn't settled down anywhere yet, you know.
Has to be just planted or people.
Right, he's still kind of moving around, so he hasn't really built up his army yet of people. So, I mean, right now Esau outnumbers him by a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah, it takes a lot of hands. You've got that many animals.
Oh yeah, he's got people. It says he's got servants. It mentions servants, but it doesn't say how many though. But probably a bunch, like you said, because he's got to take care of all these animals. And he's, you guys go on, you guys go on, take this group, you guys go on. So he's got to have a whole lot of people at his disposal, but probably not 400. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Stop right there a minute. So for your information, Peniel in verse 30 and Peniel in verse 31, they're the same place. I don't know why they're spelled different, but they're the same place. They both mean the same thing, face of God. So Jacob believes the man that he wrestled with all night was God himself. So that lends credence to the theory that this might have been a pre-incarnate appearance of God. The Son, the person of the Godhead that did appear in human form, which would be, we know later, as Jesus. So some say that's who it is. Jacob thinks it was. By coming face to face with one of God's holy angels, that can also be an overwhelming experience for sinful human beings. I want to give you an example of that. Earlier in Genesis, when Hagar was pregnant with Ishmael, and she was alone in the wilderness, an angel of the Lord appeared to her and talked to her. And her reaction was, "Truly here I have seen him who looks after me." She was speaking of God. Well, Hagar believes she saw God himself, when in fact, the scripture tells us, that it was an angel sent by God. So, who this man was that Jacob wrestled will remain a mystery. Could have been an angel. Could have been a pre-incarnate appearance of God.
Well, I would just like to say
so.
That we have a lot of examples of angels doing the dirty work.
Yeah.
So, we never see Christ or God getting...
Right, and when you see an angel, you think you've seen God because it's so overwhelming. Yeah. They're so holy. Okay, so I'm just saying. Okay, so we don't know for sure, but I'm just giving you that example. So from now on, Jacob, because he's been touched by the angel, will walk with a limp due to his hip being out of joint. And you could say, this is what one commentary said, you could say that the change in Jacob resulted in a change in his walk, both physical and spiritual. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he, this man, this angel, whoever he was, touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. Why is that verse there? Well, what the writer of Genesis, Moses, is doing here is he is adding a bit of commentary for the benefit of his readers. And I mentioned this before, his readers, his first readers, would have been those in the wilderness on their way to take possession of the promised land during that 40 years of wilderness wanderings. That's when he probably, most experts think, Moses wrote Genesis. So these would have been the first people to read what he wrote. So for their benefit, he's explaining this, which they would have been aware of the practice, the Jewish practice of not eating the thigh muscle. So here Moses explains that there's actually a reason behind this practice. And here's where it comes from. It comes from this event back in Jacob's life. So that's all Moses is doing there, is adding a commentary for the benefit of his readers. Okay, so now we're going to have the big family reunion. Jacob can hear the rumble of hoofbeats approaching in the distance. If this were a movie, you'd hear the music. Dun, 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 dun. And that's how chapter 33 begins. Here they come. 400 men in Esau. What's going to happen? And Jacob lifted up his eyes, and behold, Esau was coming, and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants. He put the servants with their children in front, then Leah and her children, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. Here we see that Joseph is still concerned about his family's safety. So what he does is he places Rachel and Joseph in the very back, because those are his favorites, right? That's where it's the safest. That's where they're farthest away from potential danger. He doesn't know for sure what Esau and his army of men are going to do. Then it says he himself, Jacob, went on before them. He's in front of the whole group. Here's his whole family behind him. He goes on in front of the whole group, bowing himself to the ground seven times, until they came near to his brother. Here we see Jacob bowing before his brother Esau. Told you it was going to happen. This is the moment of reckoning that Jacob has been dreading for so long. Here it is. What's going to happen? But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. This is one of the most moving scenes in the Bible. Given all of his precautionary efforts and worry leading up to this moment, it's safe to say that this is not exactly what Jacob expected would happen. But here we see evidence that God was at work the whole time. Not only working in Jacob's life, but apparently he's been working in Esau's life as well. All of those old feelings of anger have long dissipated, and Jacob and Esau are reconciled. And it turns out to be a happy family reunion. That's kind of a neat thing. It's kind of a twist in the plot, and it all ends well. Okay. And when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children, he said, "Who are these with you?" Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, let me explain that. So Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant, these are mine. God's given them to me." Then the servants drew near, they and their children, and bowed down to Esau. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. Last, Rachel and Joseph. They drew near, they bowed down. Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company that I met?" In other words, all those things that you sent on ahead, what's with all that? Remember all those gifts? Cleaning the camels and stuff? And Jacob answered, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." Jacob said, "No, please. If I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand. For I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of God." That's an interesting statement. "And you have accepted me." That means a lot to Jacob, right? That they had this great reunion and things are good between them. Please accept my blessing that is brought to you. I want you to accept my gift because God has dealt graciously with me because I have enough. Thus he urged him and he took it. So in the end, Esau takes the gift. He goes ahead and accepts the gift. And Esau said, let us journey on our way and I will go ahead of you. And Esau doesn't want the reunion to end. Things are going so well. He's happy to see his brother after all these years. He proposes to escort Jacob, his family, south to his home, which is in Seir. Come along with me to where I live, to my home, just down the road. And Jacob said, my Lord knows that the children are frail and that the nursing flocks and herds are a care to me. If they are driven hard for one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on ahead of your servant. We're going to go a lot slower than you. I will lead on slowly at the pace of the livestock that are ahead of me and at the pace of the children until I come to my Lord in Seir. So Esau said, okay, that's fine. Let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. So I have all these 400 people. Let me leave some of my people behind to help protect you along the way. This is Jacob responding, what need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. You guys go on ahead. We'll meet you there. That's the idea. No, you don't have to leave any of your guys behind. We got it. You guys go on. Esau and his group, as soon as they're out of sight, right, Jacob and his family veer off toward the land of Canaan. They go a different way. Up here in the green is Esau's route. This is where they meet, right? This is where they meet, right in here. And so Esau heads down south to where his home is, in Seir, way down here. And Jacob heads more of a southwesterly direction, kind of parallels the Jabbok River and then crosses the Jordan River into the land of Canaan, and he goes off in this direction. So when Jacob said, I'll meet you in your home, he had no intention of going there. So he basically lied to Esau, knowing full well he's not going there. That's not where they're headed. They're heading over here, right? So kind of the same old Jacob in a way. So he's kind of inconsistent. He knows full well he's not going to follow Esau back to his home. That's not his intent, but he misleads Esau. Esau heads on and Jacob goes a different way.
Why not just tell Esau that?
Exactly. That was what I was thinking. Why not just be honest with the guy? That's not God's plan. Why couldn't he have just said that? You're right.
That's when he doesn't show up over here. He's going to be like, it's not like he can text him and say, well, where are
so
you?
So Esau's going to know he's been duped again by his brother. You know, it's like, God, that guy. Anyway, it's just Jacob's kind of an amazing guy. It's like he's very inconsistent in his walk with God. So anyway, that's the case where he misleads me, Esau, right there in Scripture. All right. But Jacob journeyed to Succoth. It was on that map. It was out to that direction. And he built himself a house and made booths for his livestock. Therefore, the name of the place is called Succoth. I guess that's what it means. And Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. So he's been going back to the land of Canaan. He's on his way from Paddan Aram. That's where he started, where Laban is. And he camped before the city. And from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, he bought for 100 pieces of money the piece of land on which he had pitched his tent. There he erected an altar. There Jacob erected an altar and called it El Elohe Israel, which means God, the God of Israel. That's the name of the altar that he builds. Okay, so what's happening here is Jacob's been obedient and he returned to the land of Canaan. However, God wanted Jacob to go back to Bethel, which is further, it's further than Shechem is. Keep going down to Bethel, a little bit further. When Jacob had his experience with God on his way north to Laban's house, back in Genesis chapter 28, God had instructed Jacob to return to this land. Now, this land doesn't just mean the land of Canaan. It certainly means that. But I believe God was being more specific. This is a special place that we had this worship experience together. I want you to come back here. Well, Jacob doesn't do that. He stops at Shechem. And he buys land there. And he settles in Shechem, which proves to be, if nothing else, you can say, well, he wasn't really being disobedient, whatever. It was a bad decision. And we're going to see later why it was a bad decision as we move forward in the story next week's lesson. Jacob's life, you need to know this, is anything but a bed of roses. He will soon face some of the toughest challenges of his life. I heard a story the other day. Somebody was telling a story about an 11-year-old child who was complaining to his father, "Man, my life is so hard." You know, giving all these stupid reasons about, you know, his toys were broken or whatever. And the father was thinking to himself, "You don't know anything." He didn't say this to the kid. He says, "You don't know anything. You're not paying a mortgage. You don't have a boss to deal with. You don't have the struggles of a marriage." You know, and he was thinking to himself, "You think you got it tough now. You ain't seen nothing yet." You know, and that's kind of what was going on in the dad's mind when the kid said that. Well, it's kind of the same thing here with Jacob. He thinks, "Man, the toughest part of my life is over. It's just going to get harder. You think it's tough now? Just wait." Jacob's life gets harder. He does not have an easy life.
Well, didn't he bring it on himself, though?
Oh, absolutely. Don't we? A lot of the times.
Yeah,
well,
we're talking about Jacob.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, yeah, we're just not talking about me. Yeah, we're talking about Jacob, yeah.
Not me, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
In the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, if your story was in the Bible, Sue, how would it go?
Sure.
I'm glad my story's not in the Bible either. People for all ages will be saying, "That Chris, what a dope." Anyway. So, but what's interesting about the Bible is that it presents all these stories and it doesn't sugarcoat anything. It shows people as real people with real problems, real sinful nature, exhibiting it, and God still used them. Amazing. So, there's lots of applications you can take away from this lesson, but these are some I came up with. And you're welcome to add your own here at the end. But it's one thing to know about God. It's quite another to have a life-changing encounter with Him. Jacob had two of these so far in his life. One took place at Bethel on the way out of the Promised Land, and the other occurred at Peniel on his way back into the Promised Land. So he's actually had two of these life-changing encounters. You can have more later. But anyway, so that's one. The second thing is, spiritual revival involves not only making things right with God, certainly does involve that, but also with making things right with those who we have wronged in our past. Sometimes we need to go to people and make some things right with them. The third thing is, in order for God to get us where He wants us to be, He must often humble us, as He had to do with Jacob. For Jacob, that involved a physical disability that he had to live with the rest of his life. Fourth, whenever we find ourselves overwhelmed by life, it is always a good idea to go to God in prayer. Credit Jacob there. He did do that. And the fifth thing is, I'm so thankful for this. God doesn't expect us to be perfect, just submissive.